of limiters and other holy frayers, that search in every land and every stream, as thick as motes in the sunbeam, blessing halls, chambers, kitchens, bowers, cities, boroughs, castles, high towers, thorps and barns, shippens and dairies. This maketh that there be no fairies. For there as wont to walken was an elf, there walketh now the limiter himself, in undermaileth and in mornings, and says his matins and his holy things, as he goes in his limitation. Women may go now safely up and down, in every bush and under every tree. There is no other incubus but he, and he ne will not do them but dishonour. And so befell it, that this King Arthur had in his house a lusty bachelor, that on a day came riding from the river, and happened that, alone as she was born, he saw a maiden walking him before, of which maid anon maugre her head. By very force he raft her maidenhead, for which oppression was such clamour and such pursuit unto the King Arthur, that damned was this knight for to be dead by course of law, and should have lost his head. Peradventure such was the statute, though, but that the queen and other ladies more, so long prayed in the king of grace, till he his life him granted in the place, and gave him to the queen, all at her will, to choose whether she will him save or spill. The queen thanked the king with all her might, and after this thus spoke she to the knight, when that she saw her time upon a day. "Thou standest yet," quod she, "in such array, that of thy life yet hast thou no surety. I grant thee life, if thou canst tell in me, what thing is it that women most desiren? Beware, and keep thy neckbone from iron. And if thou canst not tell it me anon, yet will I give thee leave for to gon a twelvemonth and a day to seek and lure an answer sufficient in this matter. And surety will I have, ere that thou pace thy body for to yielden in this place." Woe was the knight, and sorrowfully he sigheth. But what? He may not do all as him liketh. And at the last he chose him for to wend, and come again right at the year's end, with such answer as God would him purvey, and takes his leave and wendeth forth his way. He seeketh every house and every place, where as he hopeth for to find in grace, to learn what thing women loven most. But he ne could arriven in no coast, whereas he might find in this matter two creatures according in fair. Some said women loven best riches, some said honour, some said jolliness, some rich array, some said lust abed, and oftentimes to be widow and wed. Some said that our heart is most eased when that we be e-flattered and e-pleased. He goes full nigh the sooth, I will not lie. A man shall win us best with flattery, and with attendance and with busyness be we e-limed both more and less. And some say that we loven best for to be free, and do right as us lest, and that no man reprove us of our vice, but say that we be wise and nothing nice. For truly there is none of us all, if any wight will claw us on the gall, that we nill kick for that he says us sooth. Assay, and he shall find it that so doth. For be we never so vicious within, we will be holden wise and clean of sin. And some say that great delight have we, for to be holden stable and eke secree, and in one purpose steadfastly to dwell, and not bewrayen things that men us tell. But that tale is not worth a rake of steel. Pardy, we women can nothing heal. Witness on Midas, will you hear the tale? Ovid, amongst other things small, said Midas had under his long hairs, growing upon his head, two ass's ears, for which vice he hid as he best might, full subtly from every man's sight, that, save his wife, there wist of it no more. He loved her most, and trusted her also. He prayed her that to no creature she should not tell him of his disfigure. She swore him, nay, for all this world to win, she would not do that villainy nor sin to make her husband have so foul a name. She would not tell it for her own shame, but natheless her thought that she died, that she so long should a counsel hide, her thought it swelled so sore about her heart, that needly some word her must astart. And since she durst not tell it to no man, down to a marsh fast by she ran. Till she came there, her heart was afire, and as a bittern bumbleth in the mire, she laid her mouth unto the water down. "Bewray me not, thou water, with thy sound," quod she, "to thee I tell it, and no more. Mine husband has long ass's ears too. Now is mine heart all whole, now it is out. I might no longer keep it out of doubt." Here may you see, though we a time abide, yet out it must, we can no counsel hide. The remnant of the tale, if you will hear, read Ovid, and there you may it leer. This knight, of which my tale is specially, when that he saw he might not come thereby, this is to say, what women loven most, within his breast full sorrowful was the ghost. But home he goes, he might not sojourn, the day was come that homeward must he turn. And on his way it happened him to ride in all this care under a forest side, whereas he saw upon a dance go of ladies 24, and yet more, toward the which dance he drew full yearn, in hope that some wisdom he should learn. But certainly, ere he came fully there, vanished was this dance, he wist not where. No creature saw he that bore life, save on the green he saw sitting a wife. A fouler wight there may no man devise. Against this knight this old wife gan arise, and said, "Sir knight, here forth ne lies no way. Tell me what you seeken by your fay. Peraventure it may the better be. These old folk can muchel thing," quod she. "My leave mother," quod this knight, "certain I am but dead, but if that I can say, what thing it is that women most desire. Could you me wis, I would well quit your hire." "Plight me thy truth here in mine hand," quod she. "The next thing that I require of thee, thou shalt it do if it lie in thy might, and I will tell it you ere it be night." "Have here my truth," quod the knight, "I grant." "Then," quod she, "I dare me well avaunt. Thy life is safe, for I will stand thereby. Upon my life the queen will say as I. Let's see, which is the proudest of them all, that weareth on a kerchief for a call, that dare say nay of what I shall thee teach? Let us go forth withouten longer speech." Then round she a pistol in his ear, and bade him to be glad and have no fear. When they be comen to the court, this knight said he had held his day as he had height, And ready was his answer, as he said, "Full many a noble wife, and many a maid, and many a widow, for that they be wise, the queen herself sitting as justice, assembled be this answer for to hear." And afterward this knight was bid appear. To every wight commanded was silence, and that the knight should tell in audience what thing that worldly women loven best. This knight ne stood not still, as does a beast, but to this question anon answered, with manly voice, that all the court it heard. "My liege lady, generally," quod he, "women desire to have sovereignty as well over their husband as their love, and for to be in mastery him above. This is your most desire, though you me kill. Do as you list. I am here at your will." In all the court ne was there wife nor maid, nor widow that contraried what he said, but said that he was worthy have his life. And with that word up started the old wife, which that the knight saw sitting on the green. "Mercy," quod she, "my sovereign lady queen, ere that your court depart, as do me right. I taught this answer unto the knight, for which he plighted me his truth there. The first thing I would of him require, he would it do, if it lay in his might. Before the court, then, pray I thee, sir knight," quod she, "that thou me take unto thy wife. For well thou wast that I have kept thy life. If I say false, say nay upon thy fay." This knight answered, "Alas, and well away, I wot right well that such was my behest. For God's love has choose a new request. Take all my goods, and let my body go." "Nay, then," quod she, "I shrew us both too. For though that I be foul and old and poor, I nood for all the metal nor the ore that under earth is grave or lies above. But if thy wife I were, and eke thy love..." "My love," quod he, "nay, my damnation. Alas, that any of my nation should ever so foul disparaged be." But all for naught. The end is this, that he constrained was. He needs must her wed, and taketh this old wife, and goes to bed. Now would some men say, peraventure, that for my negligence I do no cure, to tellen you the joy and all the array that at the feast was that ilke day. To which thing shortly answerin I shall. I say there was no joy nor feast at all. There nas but heaviness and muchel sorrow. For privily he wedded her a morrow, and all day after hid him as an owl. So woe was him, his wife looked so foul. Great was the woe the knight had in his thought, when he was with his wife a bed he brought. He walloweth and he turneth to and fro. This old wife lay smiling evermore, and said, "O dear husband, Bensity, fares every knight thus with his wife as ye? Is this the law of King Arthur's house? Is every knight of his thus dangerous? I am your own love, and eke your wife. I am she which that saved hath your life. And certes yet did I you never unright. Why fare you thus with me this first night? You fare in like a man had lost his wit. What is my guilt? For God's love tell me it, and it shall be amended if I may." "Amended?" quod this knight. Alas, nay, nay, it will not be amended, nevermore. Thou art so loathly, and so old also, and thereto common of so low a kind, that little wonder is though I wallow and wind. So would to God that mine heart would burst. Is this, quod she, the cause of your unrest? Yea, certainly, quod he, no wonder is. Now, sir, quod she, I could amend all this, if that me list, ere it were days three, so well you might bear you unto me. But for you speaken of such gentleness, as is descended out of old riches, that therefore should you be gentlemen, such arrogance is not worth a hen. Look who that is most virtuous alway, privy and apert, and most intendeth, to do the gentle deeds that he can. Take him for the greatest gentleman. Christ wills we claim of him our gentleness, not of our elders for their old riches, for though they gave us all their heritage, for which we claim to be of high parage, yet may they not be bequeathen for no thing to none of us their virtuous living, that made them gentlemen, he called be, and bade us follow them in such degree. Well can the wise poet of Florence, that hight Dante, speak of this sentence. Lo, in such manner rhyme is Dante's tale. Full seld uprises by his branches small, prowess of man, for God of his goodness, wills that of him we claim our gentleness. For of our elders may we nothing claim, but temporal thing, that may man hurt and maim. Eke every wight wot this as well as I. If gentleness were planted naturally unto a certain lineage down the line, privy and apert then would they never find to do of gentleness the fair office. They mightn't do no villainy nor vice. Take fire and bear it in the darkest house, betwixt this and the Mount of Caucasus, and let men shut the doors and go thence. Yet will the fire as fair lie and burn as 20,000 men might it behold. Its office natural will it hold, up peril of my life till that it die. Here may you see well how that gentry is not annexed to possession, since folk ne do their operation always as does the fire low in its kind. For God it wot, men may well often find a lord's son do shame and villainy, and he that will have price of his gentry, for he was born of a gentle house, and had his elders noble and virtuous, and nil himself do no gentle deeds, nor follow his gentle ancestor, that dead is. He is not gentle, be he duke or earl, for villain's sinful deeds make a churl. Thy gentleness is but renommée of thine ancestors, for their high bounty, which is a strange thing to thy person, for gentleness comes from God alone. Then comes our very gentleness of grace. It was no thing bequeathed us with our place. Thinketh how noble, as says Valerius, was Thilce Tullius Hostilius, that out of poverty rose to high noblesse. Read Seneca, and readeth eke Boes. There shall you see express that no dread is, that he is gentle that does gentle deeds. And therefore leave, husband, I thus conclude, all were it that mine ancestors were rude, yet may the high God, and so hope I, grant me grace to liven virtuously. then am I gentle, when that I begin to liven virtuously and waven sin. And there, as you of poverty me reprove, the high God, in whom that we believe, in wilful poverty chose to live his life. And certes, every man, maiden, or wife may understand that Jesus, heaven's king, ne would not choose a vicious living. Glad poverty is an honest thing, certain. This will Seneca and other clerks say. Whoso that holds him paid of his povert, I hold him rich, all had he not a shirt. He that covets is a poor wight, for he would have what is not in his might. But he that naught has, nor coveteth to have, is rich, although men hold him but a knave. Very poverty it singeth properly. Juvenal says of poverty merrily, the poor man, when he goes by the way, before the thieves he may sing and play. Poverty is hateful good, and as I guess, a full great bringer out of busyness, a great amender eke of sapience, to him that taketh it in patience. Poverty's a thing, although it seem allenge, possession that no wight will challenge. Poverty, full oft, when a man is low, maketh himself and eke his God to know. Poverty's a spectacle, as thinketh me, through which he may his very friends see. And therefore, sir, since that I not you grieve, of my poverty no more me reprieve. Now, sir, of eld, that you reproven me, and certes, sir, though no authority were in no book, you gentles of honour, say that men should an old wight do favour, and cleep him farther for your gentleness. And authors shall I finden, as I guess, now where you say that I am foul and old, then dread you not to be a cuckold. For filth and eld also may I thee be great wardens upon chastity. But natheless, since I know your delight, I shall fulfil your worldly appetite. Choose now, quod she, one of these things tway, to have me foul and old till that I die, and be to you a true humble wife, and never you displease in all my life, or else you will have me young and fair, and take your aventure of the repair that shall be to your house because of me, or in some other place it may well be. Now choose yourself whether that you liketh. This knight aviseth him, and sore sigheth, but at the last he said in this manner, my lady and my love and wife so dear, I put me in your wise governance. Choose yourself which may be most pleasant and most honour to you and me also. I do no force the weather of the two, for as you liketh it sufficeth me. Then have I got of you mastery, quod she, since I may choose and govern as me lest? Yes, certes, wife, quod he, I hold it best. Kiss me, quod she, we be no longer wroth, for by my truth I will be to you both, this is to say, yea, both fair and good. I pray to God that I may starven would, but I to you be all so good and true as ever was wife since that the world was new. And but I be tomorrow as fair to seen as any lady, empress or queen, that is betwixt the east and eke the west. Do with my life and death right as you lest. Cast up the curtain, Look how that it is. And when the knight saw verily all this, that she so fair was, and so young thereto, for joy he hent her in his arms too, his heart bathed in a bath of bliss. A thousand times a row he gan her kiss, and she obeyed him in everything that might do him pleasance or liking. And thus they live unto their lives' end in perfect joy. And Jesus Christ us send husbands meek, young, and fresh abed, and grace to overbide them that we wed. And eke I pray Jesus short their lives, that will not be governed by their wives, and old and angry niggards of dispense, God send them soon a very pestilence.
The friar is a cleric, but not much of a man of God. A member of a mendicant order who lived on what they could get by begging, he has become a professional beggar, the best fundraiser in his friary, because of some special skills, personal charm, a good singing voice, an attractive little lisp, a talent for mending quarrels and having the right little gift for the ladies, and a forgiving way in the confessional, especially when he expects a generous donation. He finds good economic reason to cultivate the company of the rich rather than the poor, who are supposed to be the friar's special concern. At the end of The Wife of Bath's very long prologue, our friar, if you remember, laughingly said, "This was a long preamble of a tale." The summoner rebuked him for interjecting himself at all, and made some insulting remarks about friars in general and this friar in particular. The angry response of the friar promised an unflattering tale about summoners, which we come to now as the confrontation is renewed at the end of the wife's tale. This creation of antagonisms between characters is one of the best examples of Chaucer's semi-dramatic arrangement of tales and tellers. The stories told by friar and summoner are made to spring out of personal animosities, and this confrontation is especially well set up, for it allows Chaucer's satire of some aspects of his society to appear to come from the mouths of the very types who are being satirized, rather than from any moralist, whether the author or someone else. The Friar's Tale is really an extended gloss on the word summoner. A summoner delivered summonses to people to appear at the ecclesiastical court when accused of public immorality. The job offered opportunities for serious abuse, such as extortion, bribery, and blackmail, especially of those who went with prostitutes, who were all in the summoner's pay, and many of whom he used himself. The pilgrim summoner's disgusting physical appearance is meant to suggest both the fruits of his sexual promiscuity and his wretched spiritual condition. One day, the friar tells us in his tale, a summoner, on his way to extort the last few pennies from a poor old widow on a false charge, runs into the devil disguised as a bailiff. Both swear eternal brotherhood and swap confidences, in the course of which the summoner boasts to the devil about his vices, an ironic and unintended parody of sacramental confession. But here boastfulness replaces contrition. So the bailiff gan a little for to smile, as well he might, for when he reveals that he is the devil, the summoner does not turn in flight. He is just mildly surprised and curious about conditions in hell. Well, he himself is something like sin incarnate, so why should he be surprised at seeing a mirror image of himself? What perhaps surprises the reader is that the bailiff devil is both more of a gentleman and more of an orthodox Christian theologian than the summoner. He knows that only those are damned who damn themselves. as he says more than once in different ways, I ride about my purchasing, to wit, to learn, if men will give me anything. This point is made with humorous clarity in the central incident with the carter who curses his cart horses to hell and the devil. But the devil will not take the horses because he knows that the carter does not mean it. His cuss words do not really express his intent, a word that crops up about 6 times in this short tale, emphasizing the major point which the summoner never gets. Another word that recurs throughout the story even more frequently than intent is brother and its derivative brotherhood. The summoner is a true brother to the devil, and nothing can break that bond. At the end of the tale, the friar drops easily into his natural role as a preacher, who professes to know a good deal about hell, a claim that the pilgrim summoner seizes upon with relish as he starts his counterattack. But first, back to the beginning, where the quarrel between the friar and the summoner is resumed after its interruption during the Wife of Bath's narrative. You will notice that there are 3 different pronunciations of friar, the purely French frère, and the English derivatives frère and friar. The reader of the friar's tale is George Guidel.
This worthy limiter, this noble frère, he made always a manner lowering cheer upon the summoner. But for honesty, no villain's word as yet to him spoke he. But at the last he said unto the wife, Dame, quoth he, God give you right good life. You have here touched, all so may I fee, in school matter great difficulty. You have said muchel thing right well, I say. But, dame, here, as we riden by the way, us needeth not to speaken but of game. And let authorities in God's name to preaching, and to school eke of clergy. But if it like unto this company, I will you of a summoner tell a game. Pardy, you may well know by the name that of a summoner may no good be said. I pray that none of you be ill apaid. A summoner is a runner up and down with mandaments for fornication, and is abeat at every town's end. Our host then spoke, Ah, sir, you should be hend and courteous as a man of your estate. In company we will have no debate. Telleth your tale, and let the summoner be.
Nay, quod the summoner, let him say to me whatso him list. When it comes to my lot, by God I shall him quit in every grot. I shall him tellen what a great honour it is to be a flattering limiter, and of many another manner crime, which needeth not rehearsing at this time, and his office I shall him tell iwis. Our host answered, Peace, no more of this. And after this he said unto the freer, Tell forth your tale, my lever master dear.
This ends Disc 6. The Canterbury Tales, Disc 7.
Willem, there was dwelling in my country an archdeacon, a man of high degree, that boldly did execution in punishing of fornication, of witchcraft and eke of bawdry, of defamation and of outery, of church reeves and of testaments, of contracts and of lack of sacraments, of usury, and of simony also. But certes lechers did he greatest woe. They should singen, if that they were hent. And small tithers were in foul ishent, if any person would upon them plain. There might astert him no pecunial pain. For small tithes and small offering he made the people piteously to sing. For ere the bishop caught them with his hook, they were in the archdeacon's book, and then had he through his jurisdiction power to do on them correction. He had a summoner ready to his hand. A slyer boy was none in England. For subtly he had his espiel, that taught him where that it might him avail. He could spare of lechers one or two, to teachen him to 24 more. For though this summoner would were as a hare, to tell his harlotry I will not spare, for we be out of his correction. They have of us no jurisdiction, nay never shall have term of all their lives.
Peter, so be the women of the Stives, quod this summoner, he put out of our cure.
Peace with mischance and with misaventure, thus said our host, and let him tell his tale. Now telleth forth, though that the summoner gale, ne spareth not mine own master dear.
This false thief, this summoner, quod the freer, had always bawds ready to his hand, as any hawk to lure in England, that told him all the secrets that they knew, for their acquaintance was not come of new, they were in his approvers privily. He took himself a great profit thereby. His master knew not always what he won. Without enmandement, a lured man, he could summon on pain of Christ's curse. And they were glad for to fill his purse, and making him great feasts at the nail. And right as Judas had purses small and was a thief, right such a thief was he. His master had but half his duty. He was, if I shall give in him his laud, a thief, and eke a summoner, and a bawd. He had eke wenches at his retinue, that whether that Sir Robert or Sir Hugh, or Jack or Ralph, or whoso that it were that lay by them, they told it in his ear. Thus was the wench and he of one assent. And he would fetch a feigned mandament, and summon them to chapter both two, and pill the man, and let the wench go. Then would he say, Friend, I shall for thy sake do strike thee out of our letters black. Thee thar no more as in this case travail. I am thy friend where I thee may avail.
Certain he knew of briberies more than possible is to tell in years too. For in this world, this dog for the bow that can a hurt deer from a hole know, bet than this summoner knew a sly lecher, or an avouter, or a paramour. And for that was the fruit of all his rent, therefore on it he set all his intent. And so befell, that once upon a day this summoner, ever waiting on his prey, went for to summon a widow, an old ribibe, feigning a cause, for he would have a bribe. And happed that he saw before him ride a gay yeoman under a forest side. A bow he bore, and arrows bright and keen. He had upon a courtepy of green, a hat upon his head with fringes black.
Sir, quod this summoner, hail and well a take.
Welcome, quod he, and every good fellow. Where ridest thou under this green shawl? Said this yeoman. Wilt thou far today?
The summoner him answered and said, Nay, here fast by, quod he, is mine intent to riden for to raisen up a rent that longeth to my lord's duty.
Art thou then a bailiff?
Yea, quod he. He durst not for very filth and shame say that he was a summoner for the name.
Depardieu, quod this yeoman, dear brother, thou art a bailiff, and I am another. I am unknown as in this country. Of thine acquaintance I would pray in thee, and eke of brotherhood, if that you lest. I have gold and silver in my chest, if that thee hap to come into our shire. All shall be thine, right as thou wilt desire. "Gramercy," quoth this summoner, "by my faith." Ever each in other's hand his truth he layeth, for to be sworn brothers till they die. In dalliance they riden forth their way. This summoner, which that was as full of jangles, as full of venom be these warry angles, and ever inquiring upon everything, "Brother," quoth he, "where is now your dwelling, another day if that I should you seek?" This yeoman him answered in soft speech, "Brother," quoth he, "far in the north country, whereas I hope some time I shall thee see. Ere we depart, I shall thee so well wiss, that of mine house ne shalt thou never miss." "Now, brother," quoth this summoner, "I you pray, teach me, while that we riden by the way, since that you be a bailiff, as am I, some subtlety, and tell me faithfully in mine office how I may most win, and spareth not for conscience nor for sin, but as my brother. Tell me, how do you?" "Now by my truth, brother dear," said he, "as I shall tell in thee a faithful tale, my wages be full straight and full small. My lord is hard to me and dangerous, and my office is full laborious, and therefore by extortions I live. Forsooth, I take all that men will me give, all gates by sleight or by violence. From year to year I win all my dispense. I can no better tell unfaithfully." "Now, certes," quoth this summoner, "so fare I. I spare not to take in, God it wot, but if it be too heavy or too hot, what I may get in counsel privily. No manner conscience of that have I. Ne'er mine extortion I might not liven, nor of such japes ne will I not be shriven. Stomach nor conscience ne know I none. I shrew these shrift fathers every one. Well be we met by God and by Saint James. But leave a brother, tell me then thy name," quoth this summoner. In this meanwhile this yeoman gan a little for to smile. "Brother," quoth he, "wilt thou that I thee tell? I am a fiend. My dwelling is in hell. And here I ride about my purchasing, to wit if men will give me anything. My purchase is the effect of all my rent. Look how thou ridest for the same intent to win good. Thou reckest never how. Right so fare I. For ride I would right now unto the world's end for a prey." "Ah," quoth this summoner, "Benstie, what say you? I weened you were a yeoman truly. You have a man's shape as well as I. Have you a figure then determinate in hell where you be in your estate?" "Nay, certainly," quoth he, "there have we none. But when us liketh we can take us one, or else make you seem that we be shape, sometime like a man, or like an ape, or like an angel can I ride or go. It is no wonder thing, though it be so. A lousy juggler can deceive in thee, and pardy yet can I more craft than he." "Why," quoth the summoner, "ride you then, or go in sundry shapes, and not always in one?" "For we," quoth he, "will us such forms make, as most is able our prey for to take." "What maketh you to have all this labour?"
"Full many a cause leaves, Sir Summoner," said this fiend. "But all thing hath time. The day is short, and it is passed prime, and yet ne won I nothing in this day. I will intend to winning, if I may, and not intend our wits to declare. For, brother mine, thy wit is all too bare to understand, although I told them thee. But for thou askest, why labor we? For sometimes we be God's instruments and means to do his commandments. When that him list upon his creatures in diverse arts and in diverse figures. Without in him we have no might, certain, if that him list to stand in there against. And sometimes at our prayer have we leave only the body and not the soul to grieve. Witness on Job, whom that we didn't woe. And sometimes have we might of both, too, this is to say, of soul and body eke. And sometimes be we suffered for to seek upon a man and do his soul unrest and not his body. And all is for the best. When he withstandeth our temptation, it is a cause of his salvation, albeit that it was not our intent he should be safe, but that we would him hent. And sometimes be we servants unto man, as to the Archbishop St. Dunstan, and to the Apostles' servant eke was I. Yet tell me, quoth the summoner, faithfully, make you, you new bodies, thus always of elements? The fiend answered, nay, sometimes we feign, and sometimes we arise with dead bodies in full sundry wise, and speak as reasonably and fair and well as to the Phytonus did Samuel. And yet will some men say it was not he. I do no force of your divinity. But one thing warn I thee, I will not jape. Thou wilt Algates wit how we be shape. Thou shalt hear afterwards, my brother dear, come where thee needeth not of me to leer. For thou shalt by thine own experience, con in a chair read of this sentence, better than Virgil, while he was alive, or Dante also. Now, let us ride and blive, for I will hold company with thee till it be so that thou forsakest me. Nay, quoth this summoner, that shall not betide. I am a yeoman, known is full wide. My truth will I hold, as in this case. For though thou wert the devil Satanus, my truth will I hold to thee, my brother, as I am sworn, and each of us to other, for to be true brothers in this case. And both we go about in our purchase. Take thou thy part, what that men will thee give, and I shall mine. Thus may we both live. And if that any of us have more than other, let him be true and part it with his brother. I grant, quoth the devil, by my fay. And with that word, they riden forth their way. And right at the entering of the town's end, to which this summoner shope him for to wend, they saw a cart that charged was with hay, which that a carter drove forth on his way. Deep was the way for which the cart stood. The carter smote and cried as he were wood, hey, Scot, hey, Brock, what, spare you for the stones? The fiend, quoth he, fetch you, body and bones, as far forthly as ever you were fold, so muchel woe as I have with you told. The devil have all, both horse and cart and hay. This summoner said, here shall we have a play. And near the fiend he drew, as naught knew, full privily, and rounded in his ear. Hearken, my brother, hearken, by thy faith, hearest thou not how that the carter saith? Hent it anon, for he has given it thee, both hay and cart, and eke his capels three. Nay, quoth the devil, God wot never a deal. It is not his intent, trust thou me well. Ask him thyself, if thou not trowest me, or else stint a while, and thou shalt see. This carter thwacks his horses on the croup, and they began to draw in and to stoop. Hey now, quod he, there, Jesus Christ you bless, and all his handiwork, both more and less. That was well twite, mine own liard boy. I pray God to save thee, and Saint Loy. Now is my cart out of the slough, pardee. Lo, brother, quod the fiend, what told I thee? Here may you see, mine own dear brother, the churl spoke one thing, but he thought another. Let us go forth about an hour voyage. Here win I nothing upon carriage.